Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get into another very interesting and increasingly relevant topic. With the graying of divorce and people living longer, there is, of course, a trend of more later life marriages, second marriages, and as you would expect, there is a financial element to all of that. And so I went out and we found a gentleman who is really weighed in heavily and is an expert in the field to help us understand some of the issues that are involved. And his name is Gary Foreman. He's founder of the Dollar Stretcher website. And you have to go and see it because there's a ton of good information there. TheDollarStretcher.com. Gary, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, David.
It is my pleasure, and we appreciate you taking time out of stretching those dollars to spend some time with us. And so I know that your background is a financial planner and as a purchasing manager, and you've got folks that come to your website every day, thousands and thousands of folks. What prompted you to start your website, to start helping people live better for less?
Well, actually, most of my professional life had been about getting value for money, either as a purchasing manager or as a financial planner. So it kind of seemed to be a natural outgrowth for me.
Very good. Very good. So for our topic, you know, again, as you are obviously are aware, and in writing the article that you did, and this appeared in U.S. News and World Report, that, you know, with the second marriage, there are some potential landmines or problems and some real challenges of keeping money separate, blending money together, who pays for what. And I've read through, you've got like 18 different techniques or tools or things to be on guard for. So I'd love the opportunity to kind of go through that with you and help people understand what's involved and what are things to be on guard for.
Cool. I should make one thing very clear, though, because otherwise my wife will be upset, because I've only been married once.
Okay.
And I have no intention of looking for a second marriage.
Yeah, that's a smart man, because if you do, you will be. How about that? Okay, so the first thing, which of course you just demonstrated, is knowing yourself, especially your spouse, and so you know her well, or you wouldn't have made that comment. So what do you mean by that? Kidding aside, you know, is it about understanding each other's perspectives on money?
Yeah, I've seen people over the years, and we all have our own money style. Quite often it's grounded in our childhood, but it becomes firmer as we become adults, especially if we've been through a marriage. And then so many marriages now, they falter because of finances. And so if you have a divorce or you lose your spouse due to death, you carry that baggage and perception with you.
Yeah.
And so here you have two people that are in some ways very set in their finances. And it's important to know not only your own, but know what your spouse is.
That's an excellent point, Gary, because, you know, when people get married, quote unquote, that first marriage, they tend to be younger, not always, but younger, and they're still growing up. In fact, I know I was when I got married to my wife. I was still growing up and still learning a lot of things about money myself. But if somebody's going into a second marriage, you know, typically that's going to be at an older age. And you made a very good point, hit the nail on the head, in fact, about people being a little bit more, things are firmed up. The paint is dry, if you will, and people are a little bit more set in their ways, so better understand that very clearly where people are coming from.
Well, not only that, but it also helps you get past the thought that you're going to change your spouse's style to match yours. It's a time to accept your differences and decide how you will handle those differences between yourselves.
That's very good. Thank you for allowing me to get that on tape, Gary, because I'm going to share that with my wife, and so that she knows that we're not, I'm not changing. No, I'm kidding. It's a very good point. Now, there's another one that's really a big deal that I want to get right to, because it's one of the biggest ones, is when you do have the blending of the with the marriage, what things, and I know this is good, really more of a question than it is instead of there being an answer here, but what things should be kept joint and what things should be kept separate?
And, you know, David, there's no one answer that's going to be perfect for all couples. In part, it depends on your stage of life.
Yes.
And whether both partners are working, and how their incomes, if both partners are working, compare one to the other. So you really need to find what works best for your family. Now, there are some rules, I think, that hold true for everyone. And that is that I think both the husband and the wife should have some money that really is theirs to do as they want without the other person having anything to say about it. You know, you can call it your fun money or whatever. But you also should have a significant portion of your responsibility and your assets and joint as well.
Okay.
I mean, you need to be invested in your marriage.
You got to have both. You need to not keep it all separate, but also there needs to be the fact that, you know, hey, look, there we can have maybe a joint account for the big stuff, and then, you know, maybe each has their own separate account.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I suspect you've probably seen it with your clientele as well. Most of the financially successful marriages give each spouse a little bit of latitude.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, where, you know, if the wife wants to buy tickets to the theater and the husband would rather buy a fishing rod, they know what their limits are. It's like, well, anything under $20 is acceptable, or anything under $50 is acceptable, whatever that amount might be.
That's good. Well, my wife is Italian, and her grandmother taught her that, quote unquote, Gary, don't let the men's know your business.
I'm not gonna argue with Grandma.
No, I'm not either. But it seems to work. So, but that works for, you know, it works. It works not only for second marriages, but it works for first marriages as well. And so now I love this because this, of course, is right up the financial prudence alley. The next thing that you talk about is plan for tight finances. So don't plan for things always being rosy. Is that it? Plan on being more prudent and careful and kind of set your expectations based on things being more snug?
Yeah, well, let's face it, anytime a couple is getting married, they have to be optimistic. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't get married in the first place.
Good point.
And so you've got rose-colored glasses on. But the reality of life is that sooner or later, somebody will lose a job, or you'll have some unexpected expenses. You'll have some unexpected medical issues, perhaps. And you want to plan for those things, what you would do ahead of time. You know, have a plan for what's going to happen if one of you loses a job.
Oh.
You know, what expenses would you cut first?
Well, and not just that, but you just hit me with some lightning there, Gary. If you've got this new marriage that is a second marriage for one or both, and then one person, something changes significantly financial, this is something I think that's about conversation that we have an understanding before, because now the person who has had the change of their situation, maybe lost their job or something else has happened, they're very vulnerable. And that's something we want to make sure everybody is clear about. Hey, look, when I said for better or for worse, I really mean it. And this happens, we'll take care of each other kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, I can think of one case that I went through years ago where children from a previous marriage were in private school. The other spouse, the non-parental spouse, lost their job. And so they really felt that the first thing to go was the private schooling for their, you know, for their stepchildren. Well, you know, mom wasn't real happy about that concept.
Mm.
That's the kind of thing that you want to talk out beforehand so you don't end up with a fight later on. You know, but there's other things, too. You know, would either or both partners look for a second part-time job? You know, there's quite a bit to consider there, and the cool and calm time to do it is while you're still, you know, in honeymoon mode mentally.
Well, and it's also, you know, it's really the fairest thing I guess you could do for each other is to have those conversations. And it's a little bit, like I said, we started the program, Gary, it's a little bit of a minefield, but it's better to address it instead of when you're running through them. And the next one, which is a huge one, is the subject of inheritance and money coming into this from maybe a parent or another family member that somebody has inherited money. What say you on that?
Well, you know, that's another one of those kind of things I think you need to negotiate as a couple. I know couples that have looked at it, that money coming into either one of them from an inheritance is joint money. But, you know, if you have one partner who comes from a relatively wealthy background where they're likely to see significant inheritances, and the other comes from a relatively, a modest background where they're not likely to see that, that you may want to say, well, no, that money stays, in the line that it came from.
Well, that's a good point. And I think, again, conversation. Now, that's what this is all going to boil down to, isn't it, Gary, is conversations before you get to the situation.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that these are for a second marriage, but a lot of them would be very helpful in the first marriage, too.
Well put. If you're just joining us, Gary Foreman's our guest today. He's founder of the Dollar Stretcher website, and it's got that for a .com, thedollarstretcher.com. And we're talking about 18 financial tools to make your second marriage a success, featured in U.S. News and World Report. Quick break. We'll be right back with Gary.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back with Gary Foreman, founder of the Dollar Stretcher website, thedollarstretcher.com. And we're talking about some of the things to be careful of and be on guard for with second marriage related to your financing. And the other item, Gary, I know that we want to talk about is really about agreeing and disagreeing. One is having an agreement on long-term plans within the marriage. You know, the expectation, of course, is that this will be the second and last marriage, but, and you know, kind of hope for the best, but be prepared for the worst. And so I guess setting out some goals for the marriage as it relates to finances, and then maybe having a predetermined plan for what to do if we disagree?
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it, David. Love can blind us. And it's a mistake to assume that you know what your spouse wants financially 5 or 10 years down the road. Because money really is it's an indicator of so much of in our lives. One partner may be thinking of retirement in an RV, and traveling the country, where another one is thinking, no, they want to stay in their homestead.
I've got that, by the way. I have that situation with one of my clients, and that's exactly it. And it's the wife who is the RVer, and the husband, you know, he likes his lazy boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my wife and I were a little bit the same too. She loves to travel, and I'm a homebody. I'm happy seeing the country via TV. And that, but you know, the truth is that if we agree on long-term goals, even if it's to say, well, one party can travel and the other doesn't have to, pulling together makes the journey so much easier and more enjoyable for the couple.
Fair enough. Now I want to drill down a little bit, if we can, Gary, because I know we're talking about some of these global concepts, and it's important. We talked about maybe money's being separate. So what you're saying then is maybe each partner in the marriage is going to keep perhaps a personal account, and then they would what? They would use the joint account more for household expenses?
Yeah, what at least I see work best for the majority of couples is that you have some joint accounts that are used for household expenses. Your mortgage comes out of that, car payments, groceries, just your routine monthly expenses. But then each party has their own, either, you know, it could be just a little debit card type of account, it could be a checking account that they can have for their own individual expenses. And that seems to work best. Now, depending again on whether you have the two income families, the relative salaries between the partners, you may say that Each person has to contribute 80% of their paycheck into the account, and the larger paycheck would contribute more. You can work out that kind of stuff ahead. The other thing, too, is, and we hadn't really talked about this yet, is there's nothing wrong. In fact, it's probably wise to plan. Once you put your plan together and you get married, agree that 6 months or a year down the road, you're going to revisit these issues. Mm. And that, because once you get together and blend your families, you'll find that you overlooked something, or some of your assumptions maybe didn't turn out to be 100% correct. And so you'll maybe want to make some adjustments.
That's fair. And then, you also mentioned, which I think is really interesting, you say one of the things you also mentioned in your article is don't keep too much separate.
No, I really do. I see couples that do that. And frankly, and this is just a personal bias, but I think it's an invitation to divorce.
Yeah.
I think you have to have, you know, what's the phrase? You have to have some skin in the game.
Right.
In this case, I think you got to have a few dollars in the game.
Because it's almost like it's okay. All I got to do is, it's kind of like two ships tied together by a rope, as opposed to taking the two ships and trading them in on one new bigger ship.
Well, you know, it to me, you have to plan for success. And planning for success means that, you know, you're going to be one family.
But you don't have to do it overnight, though. You can kind of blend it together over time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. The other thing, speaking of blending, is you need to also consider what's going to happen on the inheritance giving out side. You know, when one or the other party pass away, and that my wife's a CPA specializing in estates. And I can tell you, it can get pretty nasty between brothers and sisters,
and stepmothers and stepchildren. Uh-huh. Yeah,
even brothers and sisters.
Yeah,
it can be very hard, and so you want to set that up. Not only set it up in advance, but you also want to have, when your children are of an appropriate age, obviously, but you want to have a discussion with adult children, saying, "Look, these are what our plans are. This is what you're." When they read the will, this is what you're going to hear. And that. So if you don't like it, talk to us now, and don't argue with your stepbrothers and sisters later on.
Yeah, I do some trustee work and have worked with families with this, and I tell the parents as they're planning this out, Gary, that, you know, look, if you have a trust and I'm going to handle things when you're gone, if somebody has a problem with it, I'm going to hold up the document and say, you can take this up with them when you see them. Because they're gone and I got to do what this document says. But the other analogy I use, Gary, and I'm sure you would understand and agree, is that you already have, when there is a death, you already have enough emotional stuff going on with the death itself. Then two, there being the blended family, all the potential problems there. And then you throw on top of that this thing called money, which is like gasoline on a fire. It can just rage out of control.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think one of my keys has always been that you want to try to address any issues that are likely to be volatile in the calmest possible, the best circumstances you can get. And when you've lost a loved one, your emotions are on edge.
Yeah, that's not the time to try to talk it out.
No, I mean, goodness, you know, you're not at your best at that time.
Yeah, it really can be difficult for people. And as you said earlier, you know, having the conversation of this is how we're going to do it, and for people to be really straight. And I guess kind of really related to all of that, you know, as you mentioned, is blending it together, have skin in the game. Eventually, you've kind of unified things and it's all put together. You know, part of that is also understanding each other's money styles.
Yes, very, very much so. Absolutely, very much so. You know, something else I think that couples would be wise, especially in a second marriage, to discuss ahead of time is, you know, what you're going to do when you disagree. Who gets the last word? Do you consult a professional? If you bring in a professional, who selects that professional? Is it somebody that you already have on your team, have a relationship with?
Do we need a team of arbitrators to pick a third arbiter?
Well, yeah, I mean, you hate to see it get to that, but I think you can't have both people saying, well, no, that's my final word, and walking away. because that's not a solution.
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting, Gary, we haven't talked about this, and I'm going to grab another quick break, come back. I'd like to get your thoughts on prenuptials, because that's a whole other element of this, and I think I might suspect what you're going to say about it, but stay right there. We're going to grab another quick break. We'll be right back with Gary Forman.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we are back with Gary Forman, founder of the Dollar Stretcher website, thedollarstretcher.com, talking about some of the challenges, tools, techniques, pitfalls, a variety of things all related to second marriage and finance. And I kind of teed it up for the break there, Gary, about prenuptials. What do you think?
Well, you're probably going to have all your lawyer listeners light up your switchboard, but I'm not a huge fan of prenuptials.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
You know, and I don't know. Maybe it's just that I'm not in tune with all the divorces, but it seems to me you're teeing it up for failure at that point. Now, you know, and I understand there's situations where one party comes into the marriage with appreciably more than the other. And I guess you'd be foolish not to protect yourself in this day and age.
Or your family.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. You know, especially if you didn't have a long engagement period.
Hmm.
Really know the person. But if you talk about what we've been talking about for the last 15 minutes or so, you probably know that person that you're marrying pretty well. And so maybe it's not, you know, prenup isn't as necessary. You know, but again, like I say, I'm sure the lawyers are all gritting their teeth right now if they're not, you know, if they're not dialing.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You kind of made a point there about engagement and the length and all of that, and I think you're right. And here's a couple other comments, Gary, and you tell me what you think. All of what we talked about in our hitting on this topic of finances and second marriages, it really can apply to people who choose not to get married and who decide to live together. Or have whatever type of you know, relationship they're going to have. Also, it may apply to same-sex relationships, marriages, and just all of this. You know, all of it's common. It's good common sense stuff that people need to have a dialogue and be straight and upfront with the other spouse in the relationship.
Yeah. I think it's probably even more critical for couples that aren't married because. At least we have some laws as to rights of survivorship and what joint tenancy and all of those things mean. We don't have quite as much law established for couples that are living together without marriage.
Yeah, the palimony.
Exactly. So, I think it's even more critical for those kinds of couples.
Interesting. Yeah. I think that from, you know, what you've shared, and what I've seen in terms of working with people, Gary, I mean, it's really about being clear and not leaving things to be, you know, addressed in the heat of the moment or to be addressed when things are breaking down. And also, you know, in terms of people's financial and estate plans, that, you know, address it up front.
Yeah. I suspect you've seen this often, too. I mean, the worst situations are where one partner is hiding something from the other.
Yeah.
That you're really in dangerous territory when you start getting into those kind of situations.
Well, very good, Gary. Thanks for contributing today to our program. Gary Forman, founder of the Dollar Stretcher website, thedollarstretcher.com, and we've talked about the tools for helping your second marriage work financially. Gary, thanks for being on the program.
No, it's my pleasure, David. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.